Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event. Able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
I enjoyed hearing you guys complain about all the DC TV shows because I pretty much agree.
Oh, good. So.
I liked as a childhood Batman nut. I was excited about Gotham at first, and then it kind of lost me along the way.
And then you saw it.
You know, I kept going, all right, enough already. Like, what's next? Dr. Phosphorus and the Ten-Eyed Man? Like, how many villains do we have to cram into this stupid thing?
They might as well just call it the Penguin, the earlier years, and just get it over with. I mean,
a friend of mine made a good point. He said, you know, he thinks the problem is you have all these characters so much earlier than Batman. And he said, you know what? It really would have been more interesting if we didn't see young Bruce Wayne at all. You know, or maybe like wait till like the third season till his parents are killed or something like
right,
that.
Right.
And I actually said I would love it. I mean, this will never happen in a million years, but I wanted to see a scene where in the middle, you know, Gordon and Bullock are infiltrating some goons, and out of nowhere, Batman swoops in. You know, you saw young Bruce Wayne in an earlier scene, but here's Batman. And the next thing you know, Harvey Bullock becomes Two-Face. And next thing you know, young Bruce Wayne becomes Robin, just completely messing with everything and confusing everyone. And that should be like the last episode. Because now we have this extent, like, all right, well, we know it's going to be like 10 years till we see Batman.
Right.
So it's just annoying more than anything else.
Well, and they're already messing with it anyway. I mean, the age differences are already crazy. Yeah. It's like, you can't explain that continuity.
They just felt, you knew it was going to be wrong when they showed the Wayne's murder in the first episode. I mean, really, you couldn't hold on like five episodes. You couldn't wait a season.
Yeah,
right.
It's just we got to shove everything in there to keep the fanboys happy. And it's not a good trend.
Well, yeah, but even the fanboy, I mean, the fanboys are like, no, this is not what we want. Why are you doing this? Ow, my eyes.
So we've reached peak fanboy pander, you think?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm not going to cut any of this out now because I thought that was perfect. So, hey, everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak. I'm your host, Dave.
And John.
And this week we're talking with Noah Tarnow.
Tarnow, yeah.
Tarnow. Okay. Sorry about that.
No worries.
He is the host and quizmaster of the, oh, God, I don't have my notes in front of me. The big quiz show.
Yes. The big quiz thing.
Yes. I was going to say show. That's why I knew
it was a show. He has an awesome intro. How could you forget that?
Yes. Oh. You.
It is a show, so it's accurate enough. You know.
Okay, good. The big quiz thing. Yeah. And I looked at the couple of videos online. I was looking at the website. So you guys reached out to us and that's cool. I was looking at what looking at your story a little bit, and you're actually somebody that went to school for media and then decided to create your own thing. Is that correct?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I this is getting back to what we said before. I studied sort of pop culture in school. I wrote my thesis about the history of Batman.
Oh, okay.
And I actually reread it a couple of years ago, and this is the late 90s, so it's very dated now. And I just knew I wanted to do something with pop culture and entertainment, and I was a music critic for a couple of years. And then I decided I'd always liked quizzes and games and trivia, and I decided I wanted to be a game show host. And I figured out a way – well, first of all, I couldn't find anyone to pay me to do that, so I figured to pay myself. And I started the Big Quiz thing in New York about 12 years ago. The idea was to build a show based on, you know, the familiar model of a bar trivia game, but like make it more like a live game show. And we've been doing it now 12 years in New York, still most of it. But I'm out in San Francisco. We've established a satellite out here. I'm here. We do it regularly in Boston, and we do corporate and private events all over the country. But yeah, the superhero. So we're doing a superhero edition next week, October 9th, in New York at the New York Historical Society, because they're opening an exhibit called Superheroes in Gotham, the history of superheroes in New York City.
Yes.
And they're going to have some vintage comic books on display, and they're going to have a Batmobile from the 1960s Batman show in the museum. And as part of opening night, they've recruited us to do an entirely superheroes-themed trivia quiz show, multimedia quiz show. So that was the main reason we reached out to you. And yeah, it's going to be a whole lot of fun. The host is going to be this guy, Kevin Marr, who's he's kind of like this geek intelligentsia guy in New York. He does a series called Kevin Geeks Out.
Okay.
And, he's a hardcore superhero geek himself. He's done shows about Batman. He's done shows about Spider-Man. And now he's hosting the big superheroes quiz thing. So we're really excited about that.
Right. There's a whole bunch of things going on in New York that week. It's obviously the week of New York Comic Con.
That's right.
Yeah, they're calling it the Heroes Week or something.
Super Week. New York
Super Week. Week. Yeah. So
they did it last year. This is the second year.
Okay.
So we've done a lot of events with Comic-Con. We used to go actually every year to the Javits Center and do a quiz show at Comic-Con. And then starting last year, they started Super Week, and the idea was to do like Comic-Con related events all over the city. And okay. It was a real big hit last year, they did like 150 events. So obviously they're doing it again. And so our event is kind of both the New York Historical Society kickoff and New York Super Week. But yeah, I mean, God, for any superhero geek, next week is like Nerd Hanukkah in New York. So
yes, no, definitely, and
pretty big week. A lot to see.
Yes, I mean, unfortunately, I don't know how you look at this. I'm friends with Greg Horn, and I always help him out at New York Comic Con, and you know, so it's tough to get out and do things, you know, when you're working at the con.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I rarely anymore get down to New York and actually just hang out.
Where are you? In Philadelphia?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we're based in Philly. And and actually, some of my friends that all lived in New York have all moved out. A couple moved to Atlanta, you know, so it's like I don't have family I had there. They've moved to New Jersey. So, you know, I don't have an excuse to just go other than when I'm working there.
Well, I'll tell you, it feels like you're the only person because, I'm sorry. You are going because you are going to Comic-Con. Never mind. I was just going to say, it's kind of amazing how, you know, New York Comic-Con is only, what, like 10 or 11 years old and how quickly it grew. I mean, I think at this point it's the second biggest in the country to San Diego, right?
Yes, yes it is.
And I used to have a day job a block away from the Javits Center. So I remember you would know it was Comic-Con when you would see all the crowds walking out to Javits Center because it's a long walk from the subway. Although they just opened a new subway station right by the Javits Center. But yeah, it's just how quickly it grew. And they weren't prepared for it. The first couple of years, like, the Javits Center was, like, overflowing because they hadn't opened enough. So it's mind-boggling how many people come out for that thing.
They always make that mistake, though. They you'll have a place like Otakon down in Baltimore, and they'll think, eh, it's just a bunch of geeks, and, you know, what could happen? You know, there's probably going to be, you know, maybe, a 1,000 of them? And the next thing you know, they can't even get traffic by because of all of the super Thor Gokus that are walking down the street.
This is everywhere in the last 10 years. You know, I mean, it's Revenge of the Nerds in our culture now. I mean, the geeks took over so fast.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, 20, I used to go to Comic-Cons 20, 25 years ago, and they were nothing. You know, they were in a Ramada Inn or whatever. And this is back when, you know, I mean, imagine a celebrity going to a Comic-Con 20 years ago, celebrity beyond the comic book artist.
Right.
And now it's San Diego and New York. Like, now that the geeks have taken over Hollywood and taken over television, I mean, you know, for all we can rag on Gotham, can you imagine, like, Fox, like, giving a crap what a Batman fan thinks 20 years ago?
Right, so right.
It just shows how a friend of mine said this. He's like, you know, the Green Lantern movie was horrible, but it's kind of amazing that there's a poster of Sinestro in a subway station.
Yeah.
So I just think this has happened so fast. It's infiltrated every corner of our media, and that, you know, people aren't really catching on. So yeah, finally they get it. New York Comic Con is going to be huge. San Diego is going to be huge. But every new city, yeah, you're right, gets blindsided by this because they haven't been paying attention. They don't realize now comic books are everything.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's I actually just looked on the website. It's their 10th anniversary this year.
Okay.
And if you go back 10 years to 2005, we had what? I think the first two X-Men movies and Spider-Man 1 was out at that point.
Right, pretty
much. So they were big movies, but it wasn't as you know, we didn't have Iron Man yet. We didn't have the whole Marvel universe. So, yeah, I can see why, you know, they didn't think it was going to be as big, but then it just kept growing.
And more to the point, you know, even when they would make those movies, there wasn't the sense that they had to appeal to a comic book audience. It was more a sense, how do we take this thing from the comics and make it appeal to real people?
Right.
You know, my thesis on Batman, when I reread it 2 years ago, the single moment that struck me the hardest was a quote from Tim Burton. So I don't know if you remember, 1989, when he first cast Michael Keaton to be Batman, some people were upset. They're like, Mr. Mom's Batman, what's this about? And Tim Burton said, imagine a director of a comic book movie saying this now. He said, this is a Hollywood movie. It's too big to care what comic book fans think. I mean, if he said that now, he'd be taken off the project.
Or so he'd be given a job at Fox, you know.
Yeah.
He'd be given the next Fantastic Four.
Oh, God.
Well, yes, good point. You guys were talking about that in one of the episodes I was listening to, that, you know, they don't really know, and the back and forth, and they're worried. But that, I think, is endemic to all Hollywood. You know, I was listening to something you guys were saying, that they actually were disappointed in Avengers 2 because it didn't do as well as Avengers 1, which is nonsense. But I think that's Hollywood. Like, they're so – someone once said it, like, believe it or not, Hollywood is the most conservative institution in our country. Because they are so afraid of taking a chance. And anything that even slightly upends their expectations or their hopes, you know, they start jumping on it like it's a failure. You know, one little thing, one little pea shoot shoots through and changes things and changes people's minds, and everyone jumps on that bandwagon. So,
And they've done it to a lot of stuff. I mean, Star Wars was generally panned and when it first came out, and same with Indiana Jones. They don't really go, they'll go after anything before they understand, you know, the audience and what it's being made for and the art of it.
Right. Oh yeah. And now we embrace it. Well, those kinds of movies, and they're everywhere, but as soon as a couple of them fail, then Hollywood's going to start going, oh wait, maybe we shouldn't make these.
Right. When do you think we're going to reach peak Marvel movie? When do you think Marvel's finally going to blow it?
I don't know.
A lot of people are wondering that.
I'm not so sure Marvel's going to blow it.
Yeah.
Well, it goes without saying that DC is going to blow it. But
okay. You're making me cry, man.
And I say this as a, you know, when I was a kid, I was all about DC. Like, I way preferred DC to Marvel. So it's kind of heartbreaking to me that Marvel's movies are so much better. But I feel like the big line after Guardians of the Galaxy was, look at this. They take this movie with characters no one's heard of, and even this is a huge hit.
Right.
Yeah. So there was an SNL sketch where they're like, they were making fun of it, and they were saying, like, you know, the next movie is going to be a desk chair, and you're going to go see it because it's a Marvel movie.
Right.
But at some point, that it has to come down. I mean, at some point, they have to put their chips on something that's going to tank. But
I don't think they're going to do that. I think that over the last few years, you started to see the studios start to take more of a hand of it, like forcing Joss Whedon to put stuff in that he didn't want, forcing stuff to go into Ant-Man that they didn't want, the original director of Ant-Man.
Right. Good quit. Point.
So, you know, and I read, there was an article on Cracked a long time ago that talked about this. It's a treadmill. So you get the first few directors that come in and make a movie, and the studios think, well, you know, we've got some extra money. Maybe we'll get a summer good movie out of it. Turns out to be a huge blockbuster, starts the whole superhero thing. And then more and more, the studios say, hey, this is making a lot of money. Well, you know, let's make sure it makes money. And, you know, you, Ed, you watch what they're doing and make sure that you add in stuff that we know we need. And, you know, over time, the directors lose more and more creative control, and the executives start asserting more creative control, and then you have Gotham. So,
you know, too many cooks kind of problem.
Or people don't really care. Like, you know, the original directors. I mean, nobody can say Joss Whedon was going to make a bad movie by considering his background, but now they're starting to force even him. Why would you have any exec walk up to Joss Whedon and tell him, no, I don't think this will work. You should do this.
Yeah. Well, and that's especially sad, because I felt like the big thing that Marvel was doing that was so much better than DC, and Joss Whedon was the prime example, is, you know, hiring good people and giving them power, you know, and that's what DC wouldn't do, the meddling. I mean, if we go back far enough, you look at the last Joel Schumacher Batman movie, which is might be the worst movie I've ever seen, which apparently they just kept shoving characters in because the studio wanted, oh, we can get Arnold Schwarzenegger, we got to get Batgirl in here. And it resulted in, I'm not exaggerating when I say that might be the worst movie I've ever seen.
Well, actually, to kind of answer your question a little bit about when Marvel might fail, and I know this has kind of probably been said already, especially when Guardians was coming out, but I think next year they're taking two big gambles in the same year. The first one being Civil War, in the sense that, you know, like, I read Civil War when it came out. It actually, I've said this many times before, like, I had stopped collecting, and then Civil War came out, and that got me back into collecting comics again. I really enjoyed that story, but it worked for the Marvel universe and for the world at the time that book was written. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. You know, it was all the political stuff that was going on in the real world was reflected in how people felt in this book, and it was one well done. And the corner piece, the heart of the whole story was Spider-Man, because at first he's on the registration side, he reveals his identity, and then he realizes it was a mistake and decides to go with the non-registration heroes, and they don't have that centerpiece for Civil War. They're bringing Spider-Man in, but they're introducing him in this movie, so we're not attached to him yet. We don't feel anything for Spider-Man yet.
Yeah, I wouldn't write that off, because the fact is we are attached to Spider-Man. And I think, especially now in our culture, you know, they can introduce Spider-Man the first 10 minutes of a movie. And I think it's a safe bet that, you know, an hour later, we can have an attachment to him because he's Spider-Man.
True.
I mean, yeah,
true.
They couldn't introduce, you know, like Power Man or some made up. Well, Power Man actually is a Marvel character. But, you know, whatever, Stupendous Man, and then expect, you're right, if it were just a made-up superhero, made-up character. But, you know, they might be able to rely on people knowing who Spider-Man is, caring who Spider-Man is, and that being a way to sort of skip over an entire movie to introduce him to that universe.
You know what right. As long as he's not doing a John Travolta strut down the street, because, you know, then it just gets creepy.
Yes, then it gets. But that's another movie that apparently a big problem with Spider-Man 3 is they didn't want to, I guess it was Raimi, did not want to put Venom in.
Right.
And the studio forced him.
Yes. Said,
you have to have Venom in there. And, you know, the movie would have been 10 times better if he hadn't been in there. So.
Right. Yeah. I mean, how many people have heard the story when they had Kevin Smith writing the Superman Lives script?
Yes. Yep.
And he's in a meeting and they put a toy in front of him and they're like, write that into the script.
Yep.
And he's like, what?
Yep. And, well, that was another big problem with Batman and Robin. There's an actual word for that. Have you heard the word toyetic?
No.
Toyetic is a word used in Hollywood and I guess other places, which is it describes a movie or a TV show that seems to be geared to market toys.
Okay.
So if you look up some scathing reviews of Batman and Robin, that's where I first read it. Is like the movie had too much of a toyetic approach. I don't know. That's definitely where I first read it, and I'm pretty sure it's on the Wikipedia page for Batman and Robin. So, you know, have at it.
Right, right. But that was also, and I think we actually talked about this in one of our last episodes, was that was the whole thing is Batman Returns was too dark, right. that there were toy sales weren't doing well because kids were, you know, didn't go see the movie. And, you know, I think the one I heard, the biggest example was McDonald's had a Happy Toy that had the Penguin in it, and no kids were buying the Happy Toy, the Happy Meal.
That Penguin was scary, man. That was like a nuclear mutant. I mean,
he was great. That's one of my favorite conceptions of the Penguin. I think I like the idea the Penguin is like kind of a weirdo, kind of creepy freak show character.
Yes, right. And it works for cool. fans of that kind of
yes
thing, but right, for kids it doesn't work. So then that's the rumor of, like, you know, they started saying, oh, you gotta lighten it up, bring in toys. And that's when Burton walked away and they brought in Schumacher, who was like, right. I like 66 Batman.
Yeah.
I can make it work.
Well, the thing is, I actually like Batman Forever a lot, or at least parts of it. But I like 66 Batman too. You know, it was definitely different, but I thought parts of it really understood what it was getting at. Jim Carrey made me want to, you know, punch his face in so many times. But, you know, nobody's perfect.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I think the 60, I like the 66 Batman for what it was. And the people who were involved with the show admit it now. They're like, you know, it was a comedy. We weren't, one was taking it seriously.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Right.
That's what's great about it. And if you approach it on that level, you know, I mean, I feel like, you know, when we were kids, before the Burton movies, you asked the average person who Batman is, and they thought the TV show.
Right.
And what the Burton movies really did is they changed the popular conception of Batman to be a lot darker and a lot different. They supplanted Batman 66 in people's minds. Now,
right.
You could argue it would have been supplanted by anything because time would pass. But it's really, you know, you remember how people were surprised that it was a dark Batman. And then nerds like us were going, but he's been dark in the comics for years.
Yeah.
We were like offended. So even as a kid, like, oh, old Batman offends me. Batman is serious. But like, when you get a little older and you can kind of put aside those pretensions, yeah, you can step back and you're right, and love it for what it was, which is really funny and really clever. And, you know, the death traps were cute. And, you know, it's a fun show. I mean, it kind of overstayed its welcome because it was the same thing over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
But it was such a creative show. And, you know, there's a place for movies like Batman Forever. And we might get to a point where, you know, things like that can coexist. Like, we can live in a world where we can simultaneously have a dark Batman on TV and then have a wacky Batman movie, you know?
Right.
I mean, comics can handle that. And I think we're getting to a point where the non-comic reading general public superhero movie going fandom base can go for that as well.
Well, and that's true. I mean, you can look at it this way. I mean, they've had dark versions, more adult versions of Batman. At least Neil Adams started it, you know, in the late 60s, early 70s in the comics, but yet we had Super Friends on TV. You know?
Oh, good point. Yeah.
So exactly. Like, yes, the cartoons were for the kids to get them to go buy the toys, and the comics, you know, were a little older, you know, and we can still do that, you know. I mean, look, they just had the Batman Brave and the Bold. Was on for a long time.
That show was so good. That show was great. I mean, talk about striking a balance. I just thought that show was, and what they did to Aquaman, I loved it. I missed it. He was great. That's like the best Aquaman ever.
Which one? The one from Brave and the Bold, or the Bruce Timm one? Because I kind of like the Bruce Timm one, but you know, I like the dark, gritty stuff.
The Bruce Timm one was good. I mean, the Bruce Timm everything was good. I mean, I think the Justice League cartoon is like the best superhero any TV show ever. But the Brave and the Bold Aquaman was funny. You know, he was always shouting outrageous and he was having a good time.
Yeah.
And they really kind of, you know, they really kind of found this niche for Aquaman, a character who has never really, you know, he's always been a kind of underdog character. And they found a way to really make him kind of fun and wacky and give him this personality that he had never really had before.
Right.
So, you know, one of the many things I liked about the show. And it looked good and the stories were good and they made good use of more obscure characters. So I felt like it covered a lot of bases really well.
Yes. Yeah. It's, you know, and as fun as that show was, and as, you know, geared towards kids as it was definitely better than Teen Titans Go.
Yeah. I was not a big fan of that. Not a big fan.
So, a little bit more about the big quiz thing. So when you like one of the things I was kind of curious about is how do you come up with the questions for it?
Well, you know, like I said, I got into this business because I wanted to be a game show host. I wanted to write trivia questions.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I tried getting work doing that and didn't really turn up much. I almost got a job writing for Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. I came this close.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, it's something that in some ways comes naturally to me. And now that I've been doing it so long, you know, just walk around observing, making notes, figuring out how to find the interesting trivia factoid in every story or in most stories, and then figuring out how to make that factoid into an effective question. And like anything creative, you know, there are good ways of writing a trivia question. There are bad ways of writing a trivia question.
Right.
Just like good ways of writing a joke and bad ways of writing a joke. And you know, I look back on some of the stuff I wrote when I started and I'm embarrassed by it now, but you know, I've been doing it long enough that I better be better than that at this point. You know, and then in the case of the superhero show, because I'm a superhero geek, you know, in some ways it makes it easier because this is something I know a lot about, or this is something that if I'm going to research, I'm going to have fun with it. And, you know, even something like this, I make an effort of looking into stuff I'm not into. So yeah, it's superheroes, but I didn't just want to do Marvel and DC. So I'm looking up stuff about the Powerpuff Girls and about old PSAs on TV with superheroes and things like that. You know, so in some respect, something like this is easier for me to write, but I also enjoy it when I have a job that's, you know, something out of my wheelhouse. For example, tomorrow we're doing a corporate event for a company that makes skincare products.
Okay.
So I had to write all these questions about skincare and lotion and sunscreen and the natural versus organic products. And, you know, it's not the most fun job I've ever had, but so it's interesting. You know, it's a good way to flex your muscles. And, you know, so it's figuring out, all right, well, here's a topic I know next to nothing about. I don't really care about. You know, how do I find the funny, wacky question in that? And, you know, some things work better than others. I mean, skincare was a tough one. You know, superheroes is a less tough one. But, you know, you make it work, like as with any job.
Can you give us an example of a skincare trivia question?
Yeah, I really want to hear that.
I'll put this before you. Okay. this is multiple choice. I don't usually ask multiple choice questions, but sometimes I do. So I like this. So dermatologists recommend every time you go outside, you should use how much sunscreen? A, enough to fill a thimble. B, enough to fill a shot glass. C, enough to fill a coffee mug. Or D, enough to fill a beer stein.
Well, I'm Irish, so I'm going with beer stein.
You're going with beer stein. Can you imagine?
I'm going to say shot glass.
You're right, David. Shot glass is correct.
All right.
Also kind of sad because really how many of us put on a shot glass's worth of sunscreen when we go to the beach? So yay for sunscreen. Right. But doing the superhero stuff is fun. I mean, just because I am a superhero geek. And that's partly why I like doing something for Comic-Con every year, because it's, you know, I enjoy it.
Right.
Whether I do a skincare one every year, we'll see. We'll talk.
That should be your new annual show.
The big skincare quiz thing.
Yeah. Yes.
We've done some wacky topics. Last April, we did, on April 20th, we did the big 420 quiz thing. And we really learned that. I don't know if we're going to do that again, because we learned that it really takes a lot to get those people off their couches and to go to a public event. It was funny. We got a lot of press on it. We got a ton of press and a ton of people tweeting about it and all this stuff. But, you know, the bodies just didn't make it out there that night. Something must have kept them busy. But it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
It could have been worse. You could have done a quiz show on Rule 34. So,
you know. Wait, is that the one about Hitler?
Oh, no, much worse.
What's Rule 34? Am I missing something here?
Oh, God. Rule 34 is the generally accepted internet rule that states that pornography or related material exists for every conceivable
object. Right. If it exists, there's porn for it. Yes.
Yes.
We've done a big sexy quiz thing in the past.
Oh.
And, you know, a lot more than porn. There was some science in there as well. And that was fun. We'll hopefully do that again at some point. So we've done a bunch of ridiculous themes over the years.
Wait, science and porn? Awesome.
You know, like, I remember I think we asked, what's greater, the age at which the average man loses his virginity or the age at which the average woman loses their virginity? And, or are they the same? Mm. And, I mean, do you have a guess?
What's greater? I'd say the woman, but the woman. That's my guess.
What do you say, David? Male, female, or the same?
I'll go with the same.
You're right. It's 17 for both.
Huh.
How about that? At least in the United States.
Right.
And it might just be heterosexual, but yeah. So, you know, we were trying to keep it not all porn-based. That being said, we did a whole puzzle of geeky-themed porn parodies. And we'd show a clip, and you have to guess what it was. So I need to wash my eyeballs after seeing some of these things. We show clips from a Family Guy porn film. Walking Dead porn film.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, I've met the director of that, which is kind of scary. Yeah. we had a still shot to introduce a Simpsons porn movie. We had a Ghostbusters one, which was interesting because everyone's like, oh, they're doing an all-female Ghostbusters. My thought was like, they've done that before. I've seen this before. And then there was a fourth. Oh, a Game of Thrones porn.
Well, that Game of Thrones is a. I mean,
I was going to say that was already porn.
Well, one thing I did learn about those movies, which is disappointing, is that the cliche is, you know, people come up with like, oh, here's a porn title for Game of Thrones. What are you going to call it? But now they don't use those wacky titles anymore. There's a whole series. The Game of Thrones porn is just called This Ain't Game of Thrones. And they do like This Ain't, you know, Mad Men or whatever. And that's a way, A, to immediately communicate what they're parodying, and B, to very much publicly come out and say, no, we don't have the copyright to these concepts or these characters, so please don't sue us. Those things are big money. Someone must be into them.
But we all know it should be Game of Bones. I mean, yes. I don't know why it would be anything else.
Apparently that is not the trend anymore. Oh, and getting us back to Batman, the single greatest geeky porn parody factoid I learned is about 5 years ago, they did a specifically Batman 60s porn parody. So Batman porn parody based on the 60s show. And the guy who played the Joker was so, I mean, the directors and the actors in these movies are clearly comic geeks. They're really into it. I mean, I saw the preview for the Avengers porn parody, and the costumes were way more true to the comics than the Avengers.
I've heard that.
Yeah, watch the preview. Just watch the preview. That's all you need. But in the Batman one, the guy playing the Joker normally did not wear a mustache, but he grew a mustache and then put the white makeup over the mustache because that's what Cesar Romero did.
Oh, that's right.
But Cesar Romero wouldn't shave his mustache, so if you look at the show, you could see the mustache under the white makeup. So this actor, to be so true to the comic, so true to the TV show, he insisted on growing a mustache before they put the makeup on. That's hardcore, man.
Yes, it is.
What way is the one?
Well, they are method actors, so.
Yes, they are. Yes, they definitely live out the role, so.
So, oh my God.
So I'm researching that quiz. I was very careful to clear the history on my browser every day.
Well, what's the weirdest quiz show that you've done?
Thematically? Yeah. You know, I mean, it's sometimes it's the skincare stuff. You know, it's these hyper-specific companies. There's a financial services company that every summer I do an event for them. And every summer I need to, and some of the same people come year after year after year. So every summer I need to come up with new content specifically about the company. Some clients want that, some clients don't. I charge extra. So, you know, after 5 years with this company, what other trivia factoids am I going to dig up about this, you know, this company that I don't really know what they do? They're just something with money. So, you know, there are little tricks you learn. So I don't know how weird that is, but it's certainly a challenge. 420 quiz is pretty weird. We did an idea I want to try again. We did a ladies' night once just because I got tired of seeing too many men at my shows. So I did a show that was ladies' night, and the idea was it was all topics appealing to women, which some people are like, be careful. But I think it worked out pretty well. We had a video puzzle that mashed up female superheroes with suffragettes, which was pretty cool. And like women's history and like marketing the women. And one of the gimmicks was we charge less for women to enter than men. And we do, most of our shows, we do a finale, basically at the end of the regular competition, the top three teams pick a superstar member and they come on stage and we do like a game show thing with the top three teams. And the rule I had was that you had to send up a woman for your representative. So this one team that used to win my show all the time, that was all men, they like grabbed all these female acquaintances they could to come join them. And the funny story is one of the women they just cajoled into coming to that show, she started dating one of the guys on the team, like the guy they always usually sent up. And now the two of them like live together and I think are engaged. So
nice.
We did ladies' night and it made love happen.
There you go.
Trivia brings people together.
So I have a question. When you're putting together superhero related questions, do you ever feel that maybe you're too close to the material and something that you think is too easy might actually be really hard to the average person?
Yeah, you know, that's a problem with everything, I think. I mean, that's okay. One of the biggest challenges I deal with is gauging difficulty level, you know, especially when I do private events, because I don't really know the audience. You know, I can ask a client, how smart is your staff? And, you know, I'm not going to get a good answer there. But yeah, it is hard. But I've discovered when it comes to geeky topics like this, never underestimate your audience. So I think I err more on the side of it's too easy. But okay. You know, you try to mix it up, you get a feel for stuff, but it's hard to quantify. It really is. One of the things I always try to do with all my material is make it, I like trivia questions that are more about puzzling it out than just knowing, you know, instead of saying, you know, what's Deadpool's real name, is saying like, you know, it's Deadpool was based on Deathstroke and his real name sounds like Deathstroke, you know, giving him various little clever clues. That way, you know, if you don't know the answer immediately, if you sit there and think about it for 20 or 30 seconds, you have a good shot of coming up with it. I've trademarked a word, which is figure outable. I like to say the best questions are figure outable. So it's not a matter of knowing it or not knowing it. It's almost more like a puzzle than a test. So that's, you know, not everything I ask is like that, but I try to put in a lot of that. I think it's more fun. I think it's more fun to write, and I think it's more fun to play when the questions are like that. And also by doing it, you know, multimedia, a lot of visuals, a lot of audio, it throws in a lot more factors and a lot more ways to do it, you know?
Right.
One thing I did a few years ago, we're not doing it this show, speaking of superheroes, is I think I called it A Tribute to Anonymous Goons. And I showed the covers of real famous comic books, but I sort of zeroed in on like the face of the anonymous goon. So I had that dude running away while Superman's lifting up the car in Action Comics 1.
Right.
I have the guy that Spider-Man's, you know, carrying on Amazing Fantasy 15. And, you know, there are context clues in there. So even if you didn't recognize the look on the goon's face, you know, you could figure it out somehow.
Right.
So I'm always looking for different ways that people can get into something.
Cool. And do you have a sample, because we used to do a Stump the Geek thing every week on the show where we would ask the audience a question and they, you know, someone would answer and it was a no prize kind of thing. We would just announce their name on the next episode. And some of them that we thought were easy, you know, no one got the right answer to, and some that we thought were hard, people got right away. So I'm going to ask, do you have a sample of a superhero question you think is really difficult?
Really difficult?
Yes.
You know, I got a bunch here because I knew you might be asking. I'm not sure how difficult any of these are, but let me see if I can make them difficult, any more difficult. All right, here's one. What DC Comics character has been adapted for TV twice, once in the early 90s and more recently within the last 6 years?
DC character once in the early 90s.
Yep.
And then the last few years.
Yep.
This
is tough. He is not
the Flash.
An A-list character.
No, not a famous character?
He's not an A-list character. And I would say not famous, but he is a DC character. I saw him team up with Batman once.
Okay, so it's not the Flash.
Yeah, because that would be A-list.
Hmm.
Early? First time was on ABC in 1992. It didn't last long. And more recently, it was on Fox for...
No, it couldn't be. It couldn't be Constantine, could it?
It's not Constantine, no.
Yeah.
It was on Fox in the last 6 years.
Yeah, in 2010
years.
And 2011. I was surprised it lasted that long.
Well, jeez. Considering Fox.
Yeah, they'll let anything stay on.
Oh, man,
this one is not figure outable.
Wow.
Yeah.
God, I should know this.
Well, here's a clue I'll give you. He definitely a DC character, did team up with Batman, but I think it's a stretch to call him a superhero. Both shows were titled after him. Both shows, the name was the character's, more or less the character's name.
Oh, geez. This is a good one.
As he appeared in the Who's Who series in the 80s.
Okay, I'm embarrassed.
Yeah, you're the DC guy, John. Come on.
Well, I do watch a crap ton of TV, but I can't think. It's ringing some bell down in the back of my brain, but it's not like anything I can pull out. It's not the greatest American hero. It has nothing to do with it.
I'd love to see him team up with Batman. That would be awesome.
They're supposed to make a new greatest American hero.
I feel like they say that every few years.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I cannot think.
All right.
I cannot think of anything.
You give up?
You have stumped two geeks at the same time.
I cheated. I looked it up. I know, and see, I'm shocked.
I was being nice. I did not use my browser.
Yeah, what, you think you got it, David? What is it?
Human Target.
Human Target is correct.
Oh, Chance. I forgot about him.
Christopher Chance, the Human Target. Yes.
Yeah.
So He did. I did read some story once with Batman or something. But yes.
Yes.
All right. Here's one. Little easier. What percentage of the Avengers original comic book lineup was featured in the first Avengers movie?
Percentage.
Yes. I need a number.
Oh, geez.
And for that matter, the second movie. I don't think the number changed.
Shoot.
Could you? What is the question again?
Just like, what percentage of the Avengers original comic book lineup was featured in the Avengers movies?
So in the background, they, you'd see the, oh no, it's just the percentage.
Yeah. So it, I will tell you, it wasn't 100%.
No, it wasn't. I'm trying to think of the original members and then who wasn't in there. So let's do this. It's Iron Man, Hank Pym, Wasp, Hulk.
Was Hulk originally an Avenger then?
And Captain America came in later.
Yeah.
I can't
get in there.
I cannot remember if Thor was an original member.
Mm.
That's where I'm having a hang up. I can't.
So you want to take a guess? You want to take a flyer? Take a guess and
Okay, so I'll say 50%.
I'll say 80.
You say 80? The answer is 60.
Okay.
3 out of 5. Thor, Iron Man, and Hulk.
Okay, so Thor was an original member. Darn it. Why did I hedge on that?
Yeah. And then Captain America, of course, he joined in like Avengers number 4 when they dug him out of the iceberg or whatever.
Yes, yes.
So there you go. All right. Who's the last character to die in Watchmen? The book. I'm not going to rewatch the movie. I don't know. Maybe this is true for the movie too, but I don't hold me to that. The last character to die in Watchmen.
Last character to die in Watchmen. Yeah.
I thought that was Splotch or whatever his name was. It's Rorschach. I thought it was Rorschach that died the last.
That's what you say? What do you say, David?
It's probably wrong because that's the obvious one, but...
See, it's been a while since I've read it. I'm trying to remember.
I reread it too often. I love Watchmen.
They're all in the North Pole or wherever his base is, and...
See, my problem is that mine is down in my basement with the rest of the comics. And I haven't dug it out yet.
Darn it.
Wow. All right. I am really embarrassed. We need to come up with a new podcast, Dave, because we're just...
embarrassed. John, you were right.
I was going to say, I'm going to go with Rorschach, too.
Indeed. All right, here's really? What you definitely get. Okay. You ready? So the website Comic Book Resources a couple years ago did a poll. They asked, who's your favorite Marvel character? Who's your favorite DC character? And the winner for Marvel character was Spider-Man. And the winner for DC character was Batman. Who were the runners-up? Who was number 2 for each one?
Oh, number 2 for each one.
Yeah.
Oh, geez, that's good.
Batman was the number 1 DC. Spider-Man was the number 1 Marvel. Who was the number 2 DC and the number 2 Marvel? This was a poll of readers.
And this was done what year?
Probably 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Okay, because I think that plays a lot into it as well.
You think so? Because I will tell you, I would imagine the results would be the same now, but maybe not.
All right. I'm going to take a shot in the dark. I'm going to say the Marvel runner-up was Iron Man, and the DC runner-up was, Superman's too obvious.
Is it really?
All right, fine. I'll go with Superman.
Why not? It's people's favorites.
Yes,
Tom,
yes.
What do you say?
I'm thinking. All right, so fine. Yeah, for DC, well, you know, it depends. Are we including the Hemsworth fangirls or?
Well, we're including anyone who reads a comic book news website with some regularity.
Yes.
So you know who those people are.
We know who those people are. All right, I'm going with. I guess I'll have to go with. You know what? What the hell? I'll go with Green Arrow and with... Who was number 1 in Marvel?
Number 1 in Marvel was Spider-Man.
Oh, shoot. Okay,
number fine. Number 1 in DC is Batman.
So I'll go for Thor and Green Arrow.
All right. No, not Green Arrow. Superman is correct.
Okay.
For DC. For Marvel, it's Captain America.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. This is one you definitely don't need to overthink this one. But, yeah. So, you know, there you go. So, fun stuff like that.
Yeah, no, and it's funny because I'm a Captain America fan, but I don't usually meet a lot of other people that are big Captain America fans. But
well, I kind of feel like, you know, I mean, you make a good point. Iron Man's definitely more popular now than he was 10 years ago or whatever. But, you know, if you really want to strip it down and say, who's my favorite character? you have to factor in, you know, who did I dress up as for Halloween when I was a kid? And, right. you know, who do I have a picture of on my wall? You know, I think it goes a lot deeper for people than, I mean, people love Green Arrow, but, you know, beyond that TV show, who really loves Green Arrow? You know, so.
Right, right.
I mean, some people, but people have an attachment to Batman and Superman that, you know, that hardly any other character inspires. I often say there are two types of people in this world. There's Superman people and there are Batman people. And even if you're not a superhero geek, there's one that you definitely would gravitate toward more. And that's a good indication of what your personality is like.
So what if you're a Flash guy?
Well, I would argue that if you're a Flash guy, you're probably more a Superman person than a Batman person. Because I think, to generalize, I think Flash is closer to Superman than Batman.
True. He is kind of really overpowered.
He's overpowered. He's more about – the big difference between Superman and Batman is Superman is about, mystically, cosmically, the world will give me great power and I'll do the good thing with it. It's an optimistic viewpoint of the world and of power. Batman is a more negative view, that the only way someone becomes a hero is in reaction to something terrible happening. So I think it reveals a kind of deep down optimism, pessimism. And, you know, Flash, the chemicals struck him and he decided to do the right thing. So I definitely think I love the Flash too, but I think he is definitely a Superman character more than a Batman character.
Right. I've heard it a different way. I've heard it that Batman is a matter of how he overcomes stuff, and Superman, because he can overcome anything, is a matter of why he overcomes stuff.
Interesting. Okay.
That and I can't take credit for that. You have to give that to the guys who did Death Battle, Screw Attack.
Well, I think that just attests to how great these characters are, that there's so much rich stuff to, you know, if you want to look at it from an intellectual academic standpoint. Like I said, I wrote my thesis in college on Batman, and there was so much there. You know, these characters, and really any character that sticks around for 70 years or however many it is, there's, you know, characters don't stick around that long unless there's a lot to them or unless they really resonate. So, you know, there's 1,000 books you can write about either of these dudes and 1,000 books you can write about the difference between them. And that's, one of the good side effects of superheroes taking over movies is now people are taking them. You know, I had to convince my advisor in college that Batman was a big enough topic to write a paper about.
Oh, man.
Yeah. He's like, oh, that's too narrow a topic. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, it's $8 zillion and 8 billion comic books and movies and TV. And I eventually convinced him, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I didn't fail. I graduated. But, you know, I think now people are recognizing how much there is to these, you know, these archetypes in a way.
Yeah, it's when I was about to ask you about, did you get any flack for writing the paper? Because now, flash forward to 2015, you can take classes in college on Batman.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I did get flack. You know, I think I studied popular culture, and it was a challenge for me because, like I say, they didn't really take it seriously. And I remember one of the readers of my thesis hated it. Two readers, and one of them hated it. But he decided to pass me anyway. I think his big problem was he was a movie nut, and he didn't understand why anyone was writing a paper about Batman that wasn't entirely about the movies. I think he just thought there wasn't enough about the movies in it. Also, I had taken a class with him, and he didn't like me, so there was that. But totally. And I used to get offended when people would go like, oh, you're studying Batman? It's the easiest thing in the world. Like, my dog could write that paper. And I'm like, you know, just because it's about something fun doesn't mean it's easy to work on it. In fact, you could argue it's harder because it's harder to tell what's important and what's not just, you know, fun.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, but we've reached a point where we're taking pop culture seriously. But, you know, 50, 60 years ago or even longer, people didn't take film studies seriously at all. You know, and I'm sure 300 years ago, studying Shakespeare was considered a joke because that was popular culture. So 300 years ago, 400 years ago.
Right.
So yeah, got to get my timeline straight. So, you know, all this stuff shifts. And 100 years from now, people are going to be writing doctoral theses about, you know, the Real Housewives of L.A. or whatever. So
No. Just no.
I hope not.
Yeah.
but no, they already, you're right. They already are writing theses about, you know, the Marvel movies and about pop music. You know, someone I'm sure out there has written a PhD thesis on Rihanna at this point. So you never know.
Yeah, that's actually interesting because I kind of had a different experience in the sense of I was a music comp major, and when I was one of the classes was music appreciation, and of course we talked about the Beatles, and then we even talked about Guns N' Roses in the class. And this was, you know, early 90s, so they were still relevant. You know?
That's great. That's what I mean, at least from my experience, that's a pretty progressive teacher. I mean, because I agree. I think Guns N' Roses is totally worth studying. Side note, if I may, my favorite theory about Guns N' Roses, I had a real good friend in college who had a theory about why Guns N' Roses disappeared in the mid-90s. And he said, Axl Rose is the smartest man in rock and roll. He is waiting out alternative rock. And when alt rock fades away and heavy metal comes back, he's going to release a new album, and it is going to be the greatest album in the history of rock and roll.
Nice.
And I am still friends with this guy, and occasionally I remind him that he said that, and he fully admits that he was completely wrong.
Well, he wasn't completely wrong.
Do you think Axl Rose was consciously waiting out alternative rock?
No, he wasn't consciously waiting it out, but
he was he even conscious, period? I
mean, exactly.
He hated grunge and alternative rock. With a passion, and he was trying to go in a completely different direction with the band, which was, I think, pretty evident on Use Your Illusion, like November Rain and those kinds of songs.
Those albums were released when you know that sound was still considered, you know, the kind of hair metal-y that Guns N' Roses were like the best example of, when that sound was still, you know, riding hot.
Right, but
it was before Nirvana, right?
Right, but no, it was actually because Nirvana hit right before those albums came out.
Okay.
And then Pearl Jam and so on, and it started to snowball. And, you know, the rest of the band kind of wanted to morph with that sound a little bit, and he wanted to totally buck it and go the other direction. And that's why they started, you know, they started leaving the band and left him all alone, you know, and then, he wasn't a genius at all.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's hard to argue with those first few Guns N' Roses albums, but I think they're very, you know, they're emblematic of their time. All the more reason to study them in a serious sense, because I think we really get a very accurate window into culture of the late 80s, early 90s. I think Guns N' Roses were so, you know, iconic of the time.
You
know, a good argument for how every genre of music can have good stuff in it.
I mean, it's funny because that's one of the things we were talking about in the class, is that we were talking about pop music and what was popular, and all the way up through hip hop and metal. And it's funny, like they were popular because they were against the norm of what was, you know, of the time, and that's how pop culture works a lot of times. It's just
the other hand, stylistically, you know, it was very easy to sell them to masses that were listening to Warrant and Slayer and, you know, I mean, Metallica. I mean, it was like half, you know, even Bon Jovi, that was basically a pop band, they still dressed like they were metal guys, you know?
Yeah.
That was like half the music on MTV at the time. So while I think Guns N' Roses were an especially great example of that, you know, there was a market for it. There were a lot of people who were comfortable with that. They weren't really breaking down any barriers to sell themselves to an audience, I guess.
Right. But like the big difference was Bon Jovi was singing songs about guys working hard to have their girlfriend and love and other bands were singing about sex and. Yeah. They're singing about going to see their drug dealer at 2 a.m. in the morning.
Well, it just shows you how they took the form and they pushed it to a higher level. So
Right.
So we are agreed. Guns N' Roses was great.
Yes.
I like ABBA.
Yeah. ABBA is the biggest selling pop act in world history.
That is what I've heard. Yes. They made the most money.
15 years ago or so, this is true, someone offered the members of ABBA $1 billion to get back together and tour. And they said no.
Oh, my God.
Because they hate each other. Because it's two bitterly divorced couples.
Right.
They don't need the money. I mean, the guys, Benny and Bjorn, have to be insanely rich for Mamma Mia. And I'm sure Agatha and what's-her-name have to be, you know, almost as rich. So, you know, what do they care? They don't want to spend.
Well, and if you look at their credits, they've had their hand in quite a few things in, like, in songwriting, in Broadway, you know, not just Mamma Mia, but you look at their names and their credits and they're all over the place.
Remember Chess? You remember the musical Chess? I love that music.
Yep.
That was Benny and Bjorn, man.
I think it's settled then. Your next theme night is going to be an ABBA night.
Oh, that would be so painful to write. I don't even want to think of it. We've done some music theme shows where we have a karaoke band with us. You know about karaoke bands?
They don't have a singer, I assume.
It's basically, instead of karaokeing in a bar where it's recorded, you front an actual live band. And they give you the words, and they tell, you know, they generally don't have as many songs as a karaoke bar, but the good karaoke bands will know 200 songs or so. So you get to sing with a live band. So we've done some music quiz shows where we'll have like 4 or 5 rounds of a quiz, and then the breaks between rounds, people will come up on stage and sing with a band. It's really fun. Cool. We haven't done one of those in a while, but we've done them in New York, and I'm hoping to, although I've had a problem here in San Francisco, which is a karaoke crazy city, I have yet to find a karaoke band. So if anyone listening runs a karaoke band in San Francisco, email me, please.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And if you specialize in ABBA, definitely.
Yes, even better. Yay. Big ABBA. I actually once had a friend who's a member of a Genesis fan club. Talk to me about possibly doing an event for like a Genesis con or something.
Right.
I know very little about Genesis. So that would have been an interesting challenge. I mean, it didn't pan out, but that would have been kind of cool. You know, I like these challenges. You know, I like being, I've never done an all sports quiz, but I've always kind of wanted to because I'm not a sports fan. I always make an effort to put in a few sports questions. So I've always kind of wanted the challenge of having to come up with a whole sports thing, but you know, someday.
Doing all these quiz shows must be like, it'd be like playing Trivial Pursuit, like over and over again. You must have like the biggest repository of almost completely useless knowledge.
I do, but you got to understand, man, the older you get, the more you just, it's not just forgetting things. It's like the harder it is to keep up with, you know, current pop culture and stuff like that. And to know what people know, you know, what historical facts do people know? You know, are they still learning about this in school? Are they still talking about that? So, yeah, part of the reason I got into this business is my head's full of useless crap. And I was like, how do I make use of this? Is there any way someone can pay me for knowing all this nonsense?
Like most nerds.
Yes, exactly.
Again, as we said in the beginning and as we're kind of wrapping it up here, you're somebody who wanted to do their own thing. You went out and started this yourself. And do you have any advice for people out there who, you know, are thinking about starting their own thing?
Well, I think the thing is to just do it. And I think the world has made that easier. I mean, the internet has made that easier. Like I used to be, like I said, I moved to New York to be a music writer and I worked at magazines for years and people still want advice. I'm like, how do I write for magazines? And I said, just start a blog and write, or just find some stupid blog that someone else does and write for it. I mean, you're not going to make any money at first, but you're going to be able to write. Whereas 30 years ago, you know, I mean, how do you get into one of the 5 local newspapers? You know, it's almost impossible. So now there's that. And then for what I did doing a live show, you know, just go out there and do it. And you're going to suck at first and you're not going to make money at first. But at very least, you'll know if this is something you want to do or know if this is something you're good at. So, you know, just go out and do it, like make it happen. I mean, I know that sounds really sunny and kind of Pollyannish, but, you know, just do it.
it reminds me of Shia LaBeouf, but that's a...
Ooh.
Maybe, yeah. But no, I mean, that was sort of my attitude. Like I said, I wanted to write trivia for a living. I'm like, I can't get anyone to pay me to do it, so I'll pay myself. And, you know, a lot of ups and downs since then. But, you know, somehow this is how my life ended up. And, you know, most of the time I really like it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a lucky boy. I'm a lucky trivia nerd.
Unlike John.
Yeah.
Hey. Oh. Just because I like ABBA. Geez, you say that once and already you're on my case.
With liking ABBA. Nothing wrong.
I mean, we might have to bring in the question of your future with this podcast, John. That's all I'm saying.
Ooh.
So.
Nice.
Okay. So also, where can people find you online?
Well, the big quiz, you can go to our website, bigquizthing.com, learn about all our events. We have public events regularly in New York, Boston, and San Francisco. We're available for private and corporate events nationwide. We're on Twitter at Big Quiz Thing, Facebook, of course. And yeah, the superhero show is Friday, September 9th at the New York Historical Society in New York, right across the street from the Museum of Natural History. And this show is actually free. It's free admission, although the museum has stressed again and again, they really hope people show up in costume. So that's very important.
So After you buy prints from Greg Horn at New York Comic Con, head over to there.
Yep. And, you know, it's part of Super Week, NewYorkSuperWeek.com. They got tons of events all over the city. But, yeah, we're one of the many events. So, yeah, BigQuizThing.com. And, of course, if you can't make that, like I say, regular events, Boston, San Francisco, New York, all the time. So, yeah, BigQuizThing.com. You'll find it all.
Cool. Awesome. Well, all right.
Thank you, gentlemen. This was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Always.
So as if no one else has anything to add, as always, boys and girls, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week.
Okay, now it's my turn. Okay, what are you doing? Taking over Dad's mic so I can be part of superhero speak. Duh. Well, there are better ways to join the conversation. Really? Like what? Well, you can interact with them on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and even Pinterest. Wait, people use Pinterest? And what's Google+? I don't know, something to do with circles. Anyway, you can also see all their posts, including comic book reviews, on their website, where you can also sign up for their mailing list. Cool! Yep, are you still going to try to hijack Dad's mic? Nope, I'm gonna try to answer the Stump the Key question. Nice. So who do you think would win in a fight between Rainbow Dash and Squirrel Girl? That's a hard one. Oh no, Dad's waking up. My pretty eyes!
Oh, what are you guys doing? That cape's gonna get caught in the door.